So natural peace and ease. Rest in the natural peace and ease of the mind and body that is the natural peace and ease of the mind and body. And if anything arises that should interfere with that sense of natural peace and ease, attend to that. So that was the meditation suggestion this evening out of my mouth from Ajahn Amaro. And I've been using that instruction for years, probably more than a decade, because when I first heard it, something in me lit up inside. Rest in the natural peace and ease of the mind and body that is the natural peace and ease of the mind and body. That's quite a bold invitation. It's saying there's something available to us here and now. But it's not saying that we need to have different bodies or different minds or different lives. It's just saying we can rest. We can rest in natural peace and ease while the sirens are wailing, and they are. You know, they always are, whether they're outside like they are just now, or whether they're inside, the system's going, ah, what do I do now? Rest in the natural peace and ease. So it's a bold invitation. And I really had to look and see for myself the way that this entire tradition is based on looking and seeing for ourselves, how true that was for me, if it was true, in what ways was it true, so that I wasn't believing it blindly. Because those of you that know me a little bit, or who know me a little bit more, know that my history did not include natural peace and ease. My family of origin did not include natural peace and ease. Like, pretty much the opposite a lot of the time. And I'm sure I'm not the only one in this room that's so. And of course, the culture I grew up in was not exactly experiencing natural peace and ease all the time. It's still not. When Siddhartha became enlightened, became awakened, and transformed into the Buddha, he really gave some thought about whether he wanted to share what he had understood with others. Well, he looked around and said, hey, this culture, these times, they're complicated. People are confused. I'm not sure whether anybody's going to get this. That was almost 2,600 years ago. Well, things haven't changed that much in certain senses. And still, individually and collectively, we are waking up. We are waking up. I'm starting to see awakening more and more as actually a necessary evolutionary step of our species. I don't think it's optional right now. We need to wake up. However we can, through whatever doorway, it doesn't matter. The world needs all of our awakeness. So with my own history, I heard words when I came into the Dharma, and Brian was saying, yeah, here's somebody who's practiced this path for half her life, and now it's more than half my life, which, you know, I'm not so old, so maybe that's not saying so much. But when I started meditating, at the age of 17, there was no one my age doing it. It's changed. Now there are people that age doing it. And I couldn't even imagine what natural peace and ease were, much less what they would feel like, how they would be expressed in a life. It was a hope. And beside that hope was a tremendous amount of fear that, well, maybe it was possible, but maybe not for me. Maybe not with the body and mind and life that I had. The body that was in chronic pain from a car accident. The heart that was, had a nuclear blast safe concrete bunker in front of it. I needed a lot of protection. I'm not the only one. many of us have needed a lot of protection. So I mention that only because these days, all these years later, that history is so far away that I think that if I didn't teach, it just wouldn't come to the foreground particularly anymore. I'd bring it to the foreground in the hopes that it might be helpful to somebody who was where I was. But it's transformed enough that it's not in the foreground, that history, that, oh, natural peace and ease, not for me. And so when I teach on topics like this, I'm just filled with gratitude of the promise of this practice. This practice works. It doesn't work the way that we thought it would work, and it doesn't work the way that we might want it to work. I've been surprised, flabbergasted, amazed 1,000 times, but it does work. So, peace and ease. One part about peace and ease is the cessation of dukkha, the cessation of our struggle and of suffering itself. So it doesn't mean that we get a different body or a different life, but it means that all of the extra fight can be reduced and can actually be free. So the way that my dear friend and colleague Sylvia Borstein from Spirit Rock puts it, and I just finished teaching with her, so I was thinking about her, she just puts it this way, real simple. She says, the third noble truth is that peace is possible. Just that. Peace is possible. And so we can look at this quality of peace in the body. We can look at it in the mind. We'll look at it in both. I want to talk about a couple of other manifestations of peace in the body and the mind. And the first one is the peace and ease of letting go. When I was waiting in this conglomerate of cars on Highway 49, wondering, was it a car accident? Was it construction? Watching the mind leaning forward, I am going to be late for dinner. It's guaranteed. And then watching the bargaining part of the mind, maybe it'll only be 10 minutes. It's going to be 20 minutes. You know it's going to be 20 minutes, Heather. Maybe I should make a phone call. And then I realized that there's this entire line of cars, and they were all leaning forward. The minds of these cars were all going somewhere. There was someone in them, and they were all leaning forward. And that's, you know, in the less reactive manifestation. I'm sure there were other things going on in other cars as well. We've all had those moments. Right? You know, not that we're so spiritually advanced that we can't admit to the whole of our dharma, which includes that sometimes we totally lose it. So I looked at the two cars right in front of me at some point got so frustrated that they just turned around and went the other way. And there weren't really any detour roads, so I figured they were just going back to Grass Valley and giving up. And so then I pulled up behind the next car, and they had a license plate headline, you know, how the license plate have a thing around them. And literally what it said was, let go on the top part, and on the bottom part it said, or be dragged. I was like, wow, okay, that's pretty clear. What am I going to do in this moment? And I thought that was, I mean, again, it was quite dramatic. It caught my attention. But I think about how in the tradition, our tradition here, sometimes we'll talk about how we hold on to things. You know, and you've got your own object of choice that you hold on to and try to micromanage and control and make it all okay. And we grab on to these relationships or these belongings or, you know, whatever we grab on to. And we'll talk about you grab on to it, and it's like we get rope burn. You know, it's just slipping through our fingers. The law of impermanence stops for no one. And we get rope burn, it's painful. But I thought, wow, being dragged is a whole other level of rope burn. And then I started to reflect, is there anything in my life these days that I am allowing to drag me? I was just sitting there. There was nothing else to do. So I started reflecting. Is there anything that, you know, causes and conditions are allowing to drag me, or that there's so much longing or grasping or craving or clinging that I just can't quite let go? And I realized, well, in moments, there are moments that I grab on and it literally feels like I'm being dragged for a moment. And then there's this letting go. So I'm going to talk about the letting go. Ajahn Chah, our kind of great lineage masters, has a very famous quote. It's shared often, but I want to talk about it as an actual practice. And it goes like this. If you let go a little, you will have a little peace. If you let go a lot, you will have a lot of peace. If you let go completely, you will have complete peace. So how does that actually work? It sounds good. It sounds promising. And then I guess the preamble to that would be, if you don't let go, you're going to get dragged. You know, Ajahn Chah didn't see that bracket on the back of the car, so he didn't think of that one. You know, we're always improvising. These spiritual paths, they're living traditions. We make them our own. So I wonder... I need a prop. So let's hope that due to causes and conditions, yes. Having allergies is very helpful as a Dharma teacher. There's always a Kleenex on hand. And Kleenexes are great props. So here's our prop. It's a Kleenex. And so we're going to talk about holding on and letting go. And in fact, you know, it is allergy season. You might want to grab the Kleenex in your pocket and do this practice with me. Seriously. You know, if you don't have a Kleenex, choose something else, but choose something that you don't mind if it hits the floor. If you don't have anything, you've probably got like a shirt you could grab. I mean, why not? You don't have to, but let's make this real. So we're holding on. And call up in your mind something that you just love to hold on to. Yeah. So we're holding on, and we're going to hold on really, really tight. And so I'm holding on really, really tight, and I'm noticing that my fingernails are digging into my palm, and that's unpleasant. It's uncomfortable. And I'm noticing that the knuckles are turning white. And I'm noticing that the whole hand is starting to actually shake a little bit. But I'm holding on because, oh man, if I let go of this thing, it could be, I don't know, a disaster and not what I want, right? So I better just keep holding on. So if we held on for the next hour, that would be painful. We're not going to do that. Okay? But this really get a sense of what it feels like somatically to hold on. Okay? Or just call up something in your mind and check your jaw and whether your eyes and, you know, your gut. What happens when you're holding on to something in the body? Okay, so now we're going to let go a little. So we're not going to let this object drop. We're just going to relax the fist. Oh, relief. Okay? There's some relief there. But I was told a long time ago by my teachers that this path is about release, not relief. So we have to keep going. We've let go a little. We have a little peace, a little relief. Okay, so what happens if we let go a lot? How about we'll open our hand, we'll let the object hit our lap and feel the open hand. Okay, so we've let go a lot. We can feel that. But check it out. I can grab it again anytime. I've let go a lot, but I haven't uprooted it yet. I got it. Okay, I'm letting go a lot, but I've got it. Okay? So that's different. We're making progress. We've let go a lot. We haven't let go of the roots. And the roots take a long time, except in the moment when everything comes together, and they don't take a long time, and they just start to untangle and release. You know, due to our care, due to our diligence, due to our practice, right? And so we let go completely, and that thing just hits the floor, and the hand is open. It's not grasping anymore. It's just open. And because it's open, there's space. And in that space, we could say that space is pregnant with possibility. I can now use this as a functional tool to put water element in the body, right? To ring a bell, to wave, hi, connect. I can use it to connect. Thank you, a few of you waving back. Right? It's pregnant with possibility because it's been released from the holding on. And so all of our energy is now available to manifest something unconditioned. It means that we can start using these adorable and annoying little personalities that we have mm-hmm. as a functional tool instead of having a death grip on me and how I have to be okay. Oh, I'm just like this. Now I'm just like this. All these habits, all this space and freedom, it's like this. So sometimes I think peace feels like letting go. Sometimes I think it feels more like letting be. And this is semantics in the English language for sure. But when I think about the difference in a general way, sometimes there's something about letting go that can feel a little bit more active. And something about the letting be as a term to me feels a little bit more receptive. So I think about it like the two metaphors for mindfulness, and we need them both. Sometimes practicing mindfulness, we need to paddle. You know, just need to paddle along and apply some effort and be focused and keep going. And what does paddling look like? We might be working with a primary object. We might be investigating impermanence. We might be using mental noting. We're using techniques and tools. We're paddling along. Very helpful. But sometimes we get so busy paddling that the type A part of the habituation in our personalities roars to the foreground, and we forget that it's equally important to just roll over and float down that river of experience. Floating in the awareness that knows all experience without preference. Just floating with the suchness. And that too is a very important path. And I think of that when I think of letting go and letting be. So here's a poem. It's one of my favorites that kind of brings the two together. It's by Donna Faulds. You know Donna Faulds? She's a writer and a yoga teacher and beautiful poet. This used to be one of my theme poems about 15 years ago. Let go of the ways you thought life would unfold. The holding of plans or dreams or expectations. Let it all go. Save your strength to swim with the tide. The choice to fight what is here before you now will only result in struggle, fear, and desperate attempts to flee from the very energy that you long for. Let go. Let it all go and flow with the grace that washes through your days, whether you receive it gently or with all your quills raised to defend against invaders. Take this on faith. The mind may never find the explanations that it seeks, but you will move forward nonetheless. Let go, and the wave's crest will carry you to unknown shores, beyond your wildest dreams or destinations. Let it all go and find the place of rest and peace and certain transformation. Rest in the natural peace and ease of the mind and body that is the natural peace and ease of the mind and body. Right now. Please don't wait. We don't know what's next. It's like, oh. Okay, so how do we do that? First of all, we already know how to do it. Second of all, we need to train. and how to do it. They're both true. So I want to talk about it a little bit more from the somatic level. Because one of the pieces for me in my own journey of meditation, my first 10 years, was an interesting dynamic where there was a lot of capacity in the mind to let go and settle down, but then something would happen. And basically what would happen is it would start to settle, and then something from deep in the nervous system, in the subtle body, would come to the foreground and pop the system out of that settledness and of that settling into peace. And so there's a way that whether that's been true for you for various different reasons, or we're working with the roots of letting go, the subtle body is very, very important to attend to. Whether you call it our energetic system, the nervous system, whatever you want to call it. I'm not being scientific here. I'm speaking as a practitioner. So it's a really, really important to know simple techniques to settle the subtle body, to settle the nervous system itself, because otherwise we start to relax, we start to settle into the natural peace and ease that is always available. And the system goes, but... And really what that is the system's way of trying to make sure that it's here and that everything's okay. It's trying to orient. But if there's no mindfulness, it can just move into a lot of anxiety, a lot of bracing, a lot of not natural peace and ease. So a couple simple practices that can be done anytime. These are practices I literally do hundreds of times a day. Yeah, hundreds. Because the pace that our culture is going these days, I feel like mindfulness of the nervous system is one of the most important dharmas of our times. Especially if we're committed to uprooting the defilements completely. Because whatever we start to untangle, if the nervous system, if the subtle body isn't in harmony, it will reconfigure itself pretty rapidly. Because the nervous system's simple. No, it doesn't care if we have an education or not. It's just pretty reptilian. So one of the practices, and I've said these before here and I'll say them again, just being a voice of this practice in the Dharma these years, and more teachers are starting to talk about this, which I'm grateful for. And one practice is grounding. And it's really simple. If I'm doing it hundreds of times a day, it has to be simple, right? So even just now, as we're sitting here, we can notice that, just checking to make sure that this will work for everybody. Yeah, this will work for everybody. We can notice that at least one of our feet is touching the ground. You don't have to change your posture. Just feel the sensations that tell you that a foot is resting on the ground. And we can notice the sensations from an elemental level. We can notice heat or cool. We can notice vibrating or like blocks of wood, tingling, numb, pulsing. Well, I don't need to keep naming it. Some people call out, what are you noticing the sensations in the foot right now?
Warmth.
Okay, warmth. What else? We've got lots of people in this room. They've all got feet.
Pressure.
Variable pressure.
Tickling.
Pins and needles.
Yep. Which leads me to say, let's move to a different spot. How about our hands? So the hands are touching, noticing their heat and cool and sensations. You can do this with the feet or the hands, by the way. If you have a foot injury or feet are not so comfortable, you can do it with the hands. So sometimes when you do this, you'll notice, not always, that all of a sudden the system just takes a little deeper breath. It's like, oh, I could just feel my hands. What a relief. It starts to settle a little bit inside. Other times you'll feel the energy moving up, and it's like, oh, okay, that's moving up. Now I'm going to feel the hands resting, just feeling them resting. What starts to happen is that the nervous system re-remembers how to discharge extra energy. And at some point, whether it's a moment or a cycle, it starts to discharge it. The parts we don't need, the extra worry, anxiety, am I okay, protecting, defending. It just starts to like move. It's not so stuck anymore. But some of us, we've been stuck on on or stuck on off for an awfully long time, right? So it takes time. It takes repetition. It's interesting how the mindfulness of the body practices and the mindfulness of awareness practices share something in common. Small moments many times. And that is such an insult to the part of our mind that wants some big experience that lasts, that we can go, yep, that's it. Sometimes those happen on our spiritual path. But really, it's this repetition. Small moments many times. That's how hundreds of times a day I feel my hands and take a breath. Or feel my feet and take a breath. Or notice the quality that is knowing right now. Before the mind jumps in to say, what is being known? Small moments many times. And all of those encourage the natural peace and ease to come to the foreground. So when we're inviting them in, inevitably we're also working with difficulties. I've been bringing this poem back in. It got so overread in the 90s that I stopped sharing it. Now I want to reclaim it. It's really beautiful. Many of you will know it. It's by Rumi and it's called The Guest House. Yeah? You love this poem, come on! And then there's a few of us who are like, what is it going to be? This being human is a guest house. Every morning a new arrival. A joy, a depression, a meanness, some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Right? Small moments many times. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture, still, treat each guest honorably. He may be cleaning you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whomever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from the beyond. Everything is visiting. And the whole key to the natural peace and ease with everything that is visiting is non-struggle. It doesn't matter what we aren't struggling with. Anything is available to not struggle with. And I don't say that lightly. I say that remembering back to some of the most difficult mind states and difficult body states I've ever experienced. And the key is not struggling. The key is allowing that momentary awareness to move into the foreground and say, wow, even this can be known. Whatever your this is. And that awareness is a refuge, because without it, that thing can wipe us out. And it has. But it doesn't have to. And when it does, we can pick ourselves up and brush ourselves off and say, all right, this moment, completely fresh and new and available to be known and to bring awareness to. So to me, this really falls under the heart of my own practice. And the heart of my own practice is no part left out. No part. And so that includes even the parts that I am unconsciously leaving out at any given time. No part left out. And my favorite poem on this is by Izumi Shikibu, Japanese poet and practitioner many centuries ago. She puts it like this: watching the moon at dawn, solitary mid-sky, I know myself completely, no part left out. So a week ago, we just had that beautiful full moon and the eclipse. And we had the life-giving rain. There was snow in Nevada City. It even stuck for about 5 hours. It doesn't stick up there very often. Watching the moon at dawn, solitary mid-sky, I know myself completely. No part left out. No struggle. No shame. It's okay. We're doing the best we can, right? Every single one of us. It's like I travel around this country and sit in communities, and it's like I still, the sincerity. That sincerity is such a gift. I think for me, my own sincerity has gotten me through things that not much else would. Just sincere intention. And so we invite it all in. But as my dear friend Sylvia Borstein puts it, she says, we invite it all in, but they're house guests. We don't invite them to live here with us. So it's as if we open the front door and say, welcome! Shame, malice, meanness, self-judgment, amazement, gratitude, come on in. Welcome. Let me see your face. Let me feel your essence. And then there's the back door, right? I just have a back door in the house, and it's open too. It's just like, oh yeah, bowing. Yes, yes, yes. Au revoir. When we don't interfere with things, they arise and pass in their own lawful unfolding, their own conditioning. They're all available to be known. And in that knowing, the mindfulness can become more and more mature and more wise. And at that point, it doesn't matter whether it's the most horrible, unwholesome state that just came in the door or the most beautiful quality that just came in the door. They're equally available for that mindfulness to mature and get wise, and the view to be wise with everything coming and visiting and going. And that's why I want to re-bring in and reclaim that Rumi poem. It's good practice. So peace and ease is natural. What we notice is that when we aren't startled or angry or confused, so basically when the defilements are not screaming in the foreground, there is a natural peace and ease available. But sometimes it's experienced as so ordinary and it has so little charge to it, and we're very habituated and addicted to the charges of the defilements. Now, wanting and not wanting and being me is quite exciting. There's a lot of drama potential there. So it's amazing how often, it's happened to me as well, but how often I've talked to people and they'll say, nothing's happening in my practice, I'm kind of bored. And as we unpack it, what we start to realize is actually what's happening is a cessation of craving. But it's not recognized, it's not familiar. And so the mindfulness lapses and boredom comes to the foreground, and we just miss that opportunity to be free. You know, it's so humbling. What if awakening was such a simple and ordinary event that we missed it? Happens. So we can really bring our sense of curiosity and investigation with the places that aren't familiar territory. This is from one of my teachers. She says, "We are so busy talking to ourselves in our minds, we don't hear the silence. Behind the coming and going of our thinking and emotions, there is a silence. It's filled with knowing. We are conscious, we have awareness, but we are so busy thinking, we can't see it, we can't recognize. Behind it all is an awareness which can see the thoughts and emotions driven by ego without saying, this is me, this is mine." Can you hear it? Well, the sound of my voice and the sound of the traffic does not interfere with this sound of silence. It's always available. For some people, it isn't actually a hearing of it. It's an opening to it. It's a sensing. I want to close the reflection with another favorite Peace and Ease poem by Sogyal Rinpoche. It's called Rest in Natural Great Peace. Rest in natural great peace, this exhausted mind, beaten helpless by karma and neurotic thought. Like the relentless fury of the pounding waves of the infinite ocean of samsara, rest in natural great peace. Rest. This exhausted mind, beaten helpless by karma and neurotic thought, like the relentless fury of the pounding waves of the infinite ocean of samsara, rest in natural great peace. Rest. And when the waves start again, out of the pause and the silence, open the door, welcome and greet them all. Keep the back door open, everything available in awareness. Rest here.